So we've heard the beginning of chapter 7, in which in the first verse of the chapter, Krishna described pure devotional service, how by practicing Krishna consciousness or yoga in full Krishna consciousness, with mind attached to Krishna, maya shakta mana, with mind, one's mind fully attached to Krishna, which is the main principle actually, that we become attached to Krishna. So by practicing yoga in that consciousness, fully attached to Krishna means not attached to anything composed of the three modes of material nature. So by that consciousness allows one to know Krishna without a doubt in full. Then Krishna began explaining the glories of this knowledge of knowing Krishna, that so few people actually take up Krishna consciousness. It is such a fortune, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagyavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Ratabhi. Bhagyavan means fortune. So when one is extremely fortunate by his wanderings around the universe, birth after birth, one comes in contact with a pure devotee and by his mercy takes up Krishna consciousness. It is even more rare, this Krishna consciousness, than attaining liberation. So what exactly is this knowledge? The first part, Krishna is going to explain three different ways that one could be madgitena antaratmanam. One could see Krishna everywhere. Now these ways are actually for those who are already attached to Krishna, in that if one doesn't have attachment to Krishna, one, even though he may have this knowledge, he will not be able to see Krishna, even though he will see bhumira kona lovayu kamana budevacha. He will see the elements which are bina prakriti, which are Krishna's external energy. He'll see those elements, but it is that attachment to Krishna which comes by hearing about Krishna that one can see Krishna everywhere. It is that attachment to Krishna, and that is the greatest gift of association with devotees, that one actually becomes attached to Krishna and hearing about Krishna. So everything that we see in existence in this material world is composed of a combination of this apara and para shakti, the eternal and the temporary, always changing energies of Krishna. So the external energy, the maya shakti, is always changing. This is the bhumira kona lovayu. This is the earth, water, fire, air, etc. That is the material energy of the Lord, and it's always changing. So we see that everywhere, but we don't see it in its raw form. But we see it in the combination with the living entity, the Jiva Bhuta, the Parashakti, the eternal energy of the Lord, the Jiva. So it is a combination of the Jiva and the material energy that makes this world move, and it creates everything within this world. So that is one way to understand how Krishna within this material world, and understanding that everything in existence that is created has its source in these two natures, all the material nature and the spiritual nature, which are Krishna's energies. So Krishna is the origin and dissolution of these energies, and He is that supreme truth that is holding everything together. That is Mata Paratanam Na Anyat. It is nothing other than Krishna. He is Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. And Krishna, and this nice example that Krishna gives is that as counter beads are strung on a thread, similarly everything in existence is strung on Krishna. And just as we can't see the thread, we just see the beads, but actually it's the thread that makes, that holds it all together. So similarly, although we cannot see Krishna in this world, we should know that it is Krishna as the origin, the maintainer, and the dissolver of the material energy, that He is the one that is holding everything together. He is Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the maintainer. It is His potency that is holding something together, holding anything and everything together. So after explaining how Krishna is the elements, the cause of all the elements, and the cause of all creation, now Krishna is going to explain how He is the essence of everything within this world. So He's the cause that has been explained, and now He's explaining He's the essence. Rasoham kapsukanteya prabhasmi sasi suraya pranavasava vedeshu shabdake purusham rishu. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, and the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. So we have heard that Krishna is Bina, he is Bhumir Apo. Apo means water. So He is water. So He has explained how He is water as is separated as energy, and He is the cause of that water as the energy. But now He's explaining a different angle, how one can perceive Him in water, that He is the taste of water. That fresh, sweet taste of good water is Krishna. It is very hard to taste that nowadays. If one gets the fortune to get some nice Ganga water from high in the Himalayas, that taste, there is nothing like that to quench one's thirst. That taste that exactly quenches the thirst, that is Krishna's potency. He is the essence of water in that way. And He is the light of the sun. So we have heard already that Krishna is fire, that He is the Agni, or Bhumirapo Nalobhayu. He is fire. And so that fire has its essence in light. So both in the sun and the moon, that's Krishna's potency coming through. And in the Vedic mantras, the essence of the Vedic mantras is the syllable Om. Because the Vedas tell so many things. They tell how to improve our material life so wonderfully. But the essence of the Vedic knowledge is not elevation to the higher planets, but it is to understand Radha and Krishna, which is Om. And I am the sound in ether. So again, Kamano Buddha Eva Cha. Kam is ether. Yes, Kam is ether. So Krishna is the essence of that ether, and that is that it carries sound. So in this way, Krishna is explaining that every time we hear sound, there is no way that we can go a day without hearing some sound, or a minute even without hearing sound. Even if we're quiet, the sounds are even more prominent. The boys, the birds, the fans. Birds, come on. We want more bird noises. So we always hear sound, and our existence is permeated by sound. And we can't practically exist without sound. How do you do this? How can I get that? You do this. Always we're dependent on sound, and we're dependent on the light from the sun and the moon. We're completely dependent on these essences of Krishna. We're dependent on water. One cannot live without water. One can live without eating for some time, but without water, very quickly he will separate from his body. And the whole Vedic system is dependent on this Om. And what to speak of Sabdike Purusham Rishu, that Krishna is the ability in man, that we are proud of the things that we can do. But without Krishna giving us the ability to do that thing, we cannot do anything. And just as He gave it to us, if we get proud, He can take it away, because it is His gift only. No matter what it is we can do, from something very wonderful, we can invent a rocket ship or a computer, or we can simply walk and open and close our eyes and eat. All these things, these different abilities, are simply the gift of Krishna. And as He gives them, He can take them away. So whatever abilities we have, we should just see them as Krishna's gift and simply use them in Krishna's service. And we should never become proud, because just as we have them, in one split second, they can be taken away. So more, Krishna will explain more how He is the essence or the active principle in so many things that we depend upon in the material world. In other words, that we are dependent on Krishna. Without water and being able to taste water, we would die. Without the sun, we could not see. So someone is thinking that I don't need the sunlight, we'll just use electricity. But it's the sun that is providing the whole life cycle, and even the oil, and that the water is moving. So no matter how we're generating our electricity, it is still coming from the sun, the source of all energy. More, in the next verse. I am the original fragrance of the earth. So this is the earth, Bhumi. So the fragrance of the earth is so glorious. There are several ways to look at that. When one goes to, in the early morning, to a place that is undisturbed by man, a forest or a mountain, that early morning fragrance of the earth is so refreshing and gives us life. Another way to look at this, how Krishna is the fragrance of the earth, that we don't usually think, if we take earth, a handful of earth, and go, we don't say, oh, how wonderful. But if we take a rose, we say, this is incredible. But where did the fragrance of the rose come from? It's so astounding that you put some little rose seed in, although we usually don't grow roses from seeds. But you put a rose seed in, or a, what's another good flower? This jasmine flower, or lotus flower, or gardenia, friend. You put any of these seeds in, and each one of the plants, each one of the flowers that comes out, has a completely different fragrance. Amazing and different and so invigorating. Actually, if you're in a bad mood ever, just take some flowers and just smell it. And then just the fragrance, the sweet and fresh fragrance of the flower will change your mind completely. It is impossible practically to be unhappy while you are smelling a flower, a fresh flower. It is so potent. But where did that fragrance come from? You're just taking the seed and putting it in the earth and then adding water. Now water has taste, but it has no smell. So this fragrance isn't coming from the water, and it's not coming from the seed. You can smell the seed and there's no fragrance in the seed. So it is growing, the plant is growing, but it is taking the fragrance from the earth. And not only one fragrance, not only the rose fragrance, but the gardenia fragrance is also there in the earth. And the frangipani fragrance is in the earth. And every and tuberose, and this one, and that one. Every fragrance is in the earth. So how glorious and fragrant is the earth in that way. So Krishna says, I am the original fragrance of the earth. And I am the heat in fire. Krishna said He is the light in fire already, the sun and the moon. And now He is the heat in fire. So now we are not appreciating the heat so much. But in the winter we very much appreciate the heat from fire. And I am the soul, or the life of all that lives. So here is another essence. We see someone walking around and we think, This is amazing. Even the monkeys, you see them walking. They have such an amazing way of walking. And they're with their red bottoms. they sort of walk along very coolly. And it's interesting also, you watch the monkeys when they come up here, and they somehow or another, the monkeys and the crows have an enmity since time immemorial. So the crows come, and sometimes they bother the monkeys. They can't hurt the monkeys, but they just like to disturb them. So they'll fly around the monkeys, cawing at them, and the monkeys will sometimes will try to snatch at them, and then he'll just coolly walk along, and then making believe that crows don't exist on this world, and they're flying all around them, and then suddenly he'll leap at one crow like that. It's actually amazing. They have personalities. The crows have their personalities. The monkeys have their personalities. The birds have their personalities. But these personalities aren't really coming from the monkey bodies or the crow bodies or the parrot bodies. They're coming from the soul, the life. The life that is within those bodies. And when that life goes, there is nothing enjoyable or cute or anything wonderful about that dead body. It is the life that makes it wonderful. And the penances of ascetics. So what are the penances of ascetics? What is meant is that if you try to practice great austerities, you will not be able to do so. Where does that ability come from? Krishna has already said he has the ability to man. And here is a specific instance of that ability. That he gives the ability. 3 months isn't over. Nandu, to practice penance. The ability to practice penance is Krishna's gift. I once was speaking to a very powerful yogi. And I asked him, and he does a lot of his sadhana to get different siddhis, to get different mystic powers. And I said, is it difficult? Do you find it difficult to practice these sadhanas? And he said, for one who has been born to practice sadhana, it is not difficult. For one who has not been born to practice sadhana, it is very difficult. So the point is that Krishna gives those people who have the ability to practice austerity, he gives them that ability. So no one can become proud of anything. O son of Prita, know that I am the original seed of all existence, the intelligence of the intelligent. What is it that makes an intelligent person intelligent? It is his intelligence, and Krishna gives that. He's already said that he is intelligence. Kamano Buddha. Buddhya, that means intelligence. And the prowess of powerful man. Of powerful men. So wherever we look, when we see someone who's intelligent, someone who's powerful, who's anything that comes into existence, we tend to see them separate from Krishna and think, oh, this person is so powerful, but actually it is Krishna who's made him powerful. So one should not praise him for his power. One should praise Krishna. Because his power is just a tiny, tiny, insignificant molecular drop of Krishna's power. It is Krishna who has all power. So therefore let Krishna be glorified. And who could be more intelligent than Krishna? What can any man do that is so intelligent? And what has Krishna done? He's created the man. However wonderful thing the man has done to create a wonderful instrument like a tape recorder, but who has given him that intelligence? So whatever wonders a man has created, it is Krishna who has given him that ability, and he has created the original tape recorder. He is the memory, the tongue. He's created everything. So he is the most intelligent. I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. So these are opulences. We're attracted to someone who is strong. And we think, oh, look how strong he is. If someone who is intelligent, if someone who is strong, if someone who is rich goes walking down the street, immediately our mind becomes attracted to such people. So So how attractive is the source, the reservoir of all these qualities? I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. That means to bring up for the procreation of Krishna conscious children. Simply for the procreation of Krishna conscious children. Krishna empowers that act to bring forth Krishna conscious children. No! Now Krishna will sum up the second way, as the first way is that he's a combination. Krishna has created the material and spiritual energies, so one can see these energies as just Krishna's energies and see Krishna. Secondly, Krishna is the essence of everything. And now Krishna will explain a third way as he begins to sum up that know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. So it is not only that Krishna is the cause of everything, and it is not only that he is the essence of everything, but he's also the controller of everything. And how does Krishna control everything in the material world? Everything is moving. Everything and everyone is moving as puppets move, pulled by the strings of the puppet master. And the strings in this material world are Raja, Tama, and Sattva-guna, the three modes of material nature. So Krishna is controlling everything by the three modes of material nature, which manifest, as Krishna says, by my energy. So all things are existing simply in Krishna's energy. And if we have the attachment to Krishna and the knowledge of Krishna, we can see Krishna everywhere in these three different ways. We see the modes of material nature working. Which chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, or which chapters of the Bhagavad Gita will this further be explained in? 17 and another one?
18.
So everything is simply existing in Krishna in these different ways. So Krishna says, I am in one sense everything. But we should not think that Krishna is everything and therefore he has lost his individual existence. So therefore he says, I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am separate. I am an individual that doesn't have anything to do with anything. Everything is Krishna, but Krishna is not everything. He is separate. He is independent. So therefore, Krishna says, I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So this verse, text 12, completes the different explanation of the material and spiritual, or parashakti, within the material world, and how one can see Krishna through them. So we have heard Krishna actually begins to talk about himself. After explaining these two energies, he's inclined to start talking about himself. But first, he begins to explain the bewilderment of the living entities. So, Tribir Gunamaya Bhaver Ebi Savamidam Jagat Moitam Navi Jananti Mam Ebi Param Avyam. Deluded. So, if Krishna is everywhere, why isn't it that anyone sees him anywhere? He's everywhere, but we don't see him anywhere. We see everything is separate from Krishna. So deluded by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So Krishna is putting us, bewildered, in the category of all states, of one of the states of being that are manifested by his energy. Because we are also bewildered by different combinations of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So deluded by these three modes, the whole world does not know me, Krishna says, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. So this is how the living entity, or why the living entity does not see Krishna everywhere, although Krishna is everywhere and nothing could factually exist without Krishna's presence. But yet we don't see him. Why? It is because of those modes of material nature. Oh, that reminds me that there's a famous tape where Prabhupada was explaining how this rasoham apsukyantaya, and that all, we should all know that simple, at least that line, rasoham apsukyantaya, that I am the taste in water, I am the rasa, or the taste in water. So Prabhupada was explaining on this tape that even a drunkard, a person who drinks alcohol, who likes the taste of alcohol, if when he's drinking, he thinks that taste that I relish, that is Krishna, rasoham apsukyantaya, gradually, by him remembering Krishna, he will give up his alcohol and become Krishna conscious. So it is so purifying to remember Krishna. This is actually the essence of all purifying processes. Etavyareva kinkara. That the essence of all purifying processes is to remember Krishna. And the more exalted we are in devotion, the more intimately and lovingly we will remember him. But the same essence is always true, to remember Krishna and to never forget him. So why can't we do that? Why don't we see Krishna although he is everywhere? Because we are deluded by the three modes of material nature. The whole world does not know Krishna, who is above the modes and inexhaustible. So how, and the next question is obvious, how can we get free from these three modes of material nature which bind us so tightly and make it impossible for us to taste the happiness that we so ardently desire? How can we get free from these modes? So Krishna explains in a very important and famous verse, Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. That this divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. And because it is Krishna's, it is Daivi. It is Daivyesha Gunamayi. Gunamayi means the three modes of material nature. That energy composed of the three modes of material nature, it is Daiva, it is divine. Because it is coming from Krishna. So what do we think when we hear the bird? Okay. What is?
Krishna is speaking.
Krishna is speaking. Yes. Yes. Any other realizations? Yes, Krishna is the sound that ether and the ability in birds. And he's also the soul. It's his energy that's in there. Isn't it amazing that a bird can make that sound? You cannot do it. Yeah, you know, you can do that kind of sadhana, paksha sadhana. You can practice. And each of the birds have their own natures. The parrots, they're so social. They're always just getting together and squawking and squawking and squawking. They're almost never alone. And the pigeons are always in big groups, and when one pigeon flies, all the rest of the pigeon flies, and then you see the hawks up there in the sky. Only one. What ability, what a mystic power. Just with the slightest maneuvering of their tail feathers, catch the kind. You have seen? So that is Krishna giving ability to do that. But that ability is within the modes of material nature. So Krishna explains that this divine energy of his, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. So it is gunamayi. Gunamayi means the three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. And just as we take a rope, and you don't have, when you have one rope, if you have a single thread of it, it isn't very strong. But you take three strands of the rope and you twist it together and then it becomes so strong. So similarly, the three modes of material nature are this gunamayi, twisted together, the three ropes
and they tie us and bind us and bind us tightly, and we cannot break free, because it is Daivi, it is divine, it is Krishna empowering these modes of material nature so that we cannot possibly get free from them. But so it is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, he says that when Krishna says mameva te papadyante, that means those who surrendered mameva, those who surrendered to me. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna is touching his chest, putting his hand to his own chest. But those who surrender unto me, not to impersonal Brahman, not to the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna, but to Krishna. So those who surrender to Krishna, and this is the only way that one can cross beyond these three modes of material nature. Even if we are interested in merging in Brahman, until we do some bhakti to Krishna, we cannot become free from the modes of material nature. If we are interested in worshipping Paramatma and becoming Paramatma realized, until we do some devotional service, we cannot get that realization. So it's mameva te papadyante mayam etam tarantite. There is no other way of getting free except by doing devotional service, by surrendering to Krishna. So if you want to become free by worshipping the demigods, or worshipping this person, or getting money, or getting a position, it is impossible. One must surrender. That is the only way. And we should know that is the only thing that is going to relieve the miseries that we feel, and the tight constriction that we feel. Because that misery and tight constriction that we feel is the three modes of material nature binding us. So the only way, mamevate prapajyante mayamekta prapajyante. And the example is given, samasitam ye parapalava plavam mahatpadam punyaya cho marali pavam buddhiya vatsapadam parampadam. That means, padam padam yad vipadam natesham. That means that this world, or the material world, material life, is like a vast, vast, vast ocean. When we look at the ocean, has anyone not seen the ocean? No one would admit it anyway, after I put it like that. But when we look at the ocean, it is so vast. It is huge. One can't estimate even how big it is. It is just unlimitedly huge. So trying to get out of material life is crossing that ocean. Bhavam buddhiya. So when we surrender to Krishna, so there are many means to cross over the ocean. One means is by grabbing the tail of a dog, and he is swimming across. We can grab that. That is not a very good idea. That's our own methods are compared to trying to cross the ocean by grabbing the tail of a dog as he's going swimming across. But there is no way that we can swim across or get across. But bhavam buddhiya vatsapadam parampadam, that this ocean, when we surrender to Krishna, the ocean of material life shrinks down to the size of a calf's hoofprint, the water that fills a calf's vatsapadam, the water that fills a calf's footprint. So is it difficult to cross over the water that fills a calf's footprint? No, just without even a thought. So if one surrenders to Krishna, that is his situation, that he can cross over by the mercy of Krishna, because Krishna shrinks the ocean, bhavam buddhiya, down to the size of vatsapadam, the calf's footprint. So therefore Krishna says, surrender to me, and then you can get free. Mayam etam tarantite. Then you can overcome this illusory energy. And if we try to do that without surrender to Krishna, we are guaranteed to fail. So some very interesting questions have been asked. Why don't people surrender?
Because why don't people see Krishna? Because of three modes of material nature. Or how can one get free from the three modes of material nature? By surrendering to Krishna. And the next question is, well, why doesn't everyone just surrender to Krishna then? It's an obvious point. Why doesn't everyone surrender to Krishna? So text 15 answers that. Did we say this verse is required?
Yes.
No, let's not make it required. Namam diskritino mudha, but you should know it anyway. Prapadyante narat, for your own benefit. Namam diskritino mudha, prapadyante naradama, mayaya apita jnana, asuram bhavam ashrita. This is why people don't surrender to Krishna. There's four reasons. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest amongst mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, mayaya aprita jnana, so it is the mudha naradama mayaya aprita jnana, and those who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, they do not surrender unto Krishna. They will never surrender unto Krishna. That is those who have asura bhav. So these four are the mudha, the hard worker. They give up Krishna because they are so attached to the fruit of their work. They're just working like a donkey. The nature of a donkey is that he just wants to work and work and work just to get some grass. And it is said that in the donkey, I've never observed this, but the donkey in the rainy season, there's so much grass and the donkey gets very thin. And in the dry season, there's not very much grass and the donkey gets fat. Why? Because he's a donkey. He's a mudha. Because what happens is in the dry season, it's very hard to find grass. So he walks so far. No, doesn't yeah. work. No. Is that how it goes? No. Yes? Yes, yes. Say it. Huh?
I told it last week.
I told it last week? Gee whiz. Did you tell it this week? I can't remember how it... Yeah.
He's very satisfied because, well, he works so hard. Walks so far.
So you think he must
be so much grass because he walks so far.
He walks so far to get it.
Then he looks back and he says, "Whoa, I have walked so far away. So I must have been eating a lot."
That's really a donkey thinking, isn't it? I walk so far, it must be really great grass that I have here.
But then in the rainy season,
yeah,
he walks a short distance because there's grass everywhere. And so he looks behind and says, "I've only come very short distance, I must have not eaten very much." So he's an anxiety.
His anxiety. He becomes thin. I'm not walking enough to get my food. I'm not working hard enough. So he's called mudha. So it is also compared to a pig eating garbage. He's really enjoying himself. Then the naradama is the one who he doesn't practice any sadhana at all. He may even know something, some of the practices of religious life or Krishna consciousness, but he gives them up because he's too attached to enjoying himself. So he's done some sadhana. The mudha just is so attached to fruit of work that he's just has no interest. But the naradama, he loses faith in his sadhana and he becomes attached. Then the mayaya apita jnanam is they acquire knowledge, but maya steals away their devotion. They have so much knowledge, they may even study the Vedic literatures. So they have knowledge, but they don't have devotion, which is the fruit
of knowledge. So they're very proud that they have so much, but actually they have nothing. Because without devotion, we have nothing. And then finally, there's the demons, those who have asura bhav, and they have the mood of wanting to kill Krishna. They hate Krishna, they want to kill him, they deny the existence of God, they don't want to know anything about God. If they see God, they want to do away with him, like Aranyakashipu. Who is this Vishnu? Out of fear of me, he is hiding in the hearts of all living entities out of fear. Let him come out, I will kill him. Like that. So this is asura bhav. So they have, they even may know something about Krishna, but they never surrender. Now the last, we'll stop at the text 16. Another very important verse. So the next question is, who does surrender? That's who doesn't surrender. Mayaya pitajnanam asuram bhavamashvita. So here is who does surrender. Chatur vidha bhajante imam. So four kinds, bhajante imam, do worship me. Jana sukritino arjuna. That these people are sukritinos. They are good souls. They are not duskritinas. Namam duskritino mudha. They are not duskritinas, impious souls. But they are sukritinas. They are pious souls. Artha jigyasa, artha ti, jnani cha, bharatasava. So there are four different kinds, chatur vidha, four kinds of sukritinas who surrender unto Krishna. They are the artha, the one who is in distress, the jigyasur, the one who is curious, artha ti, means the one who wants material wealth, position, land, etc. And then the jnani. The jnani is one who wants knowledge. So these four are magnanimous souls, they are great souls, they are pious, because they surrender to Krishna. Oh, best amongst the bharatas. Four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So the distressed, the example of the distressed is Gajendra. Because to Gajendra, we know the story how he was attacked by the crocodile. And he was in the water, and the crocodile was biting on his leg, and for thousands of years it was so painful for him. And although the elephant was so powerful himself, he could not loosen the crocodile's hold, and the teeth of the crocodile biting into his leg. So he prayed to Krishna to help him. He prayed to the Lord to help him, and Krishna came. So when one is in distress, one turns to God, if one is pious, if one is a sukritino. If one is impious and one is in distress, he'll turn to some intoxication for shelter, he'll turn to some other ism. Out of his frustration, he'll become a Naxalite, a communist, a this, a that. But if one is pious, he'll turn to God. So that is Gajendra, the distressed. And then there's the desire of wealth, the artati. And the example of that is Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj wanted to sit on his father's lap with his brother Uttam, but he was stopped by Suruchi. I think Suruchi or Suniti? Suruchi. And he was crying and so upset. So his mother told him that if you want to gain the kingdom, the only one who can help you is God. So he went to the forest and performed austerities for the purpose of gaining a kingdom, gaining land, gaining wealth. So the example of Artati is Dhruva Maharaj. And Gigyasur, the example is Shonaka Rishi. A Gigyasur is someone who is interested. He comes to, he takes up devotional service to get some self-realization, or to find out about the soul, or to learn logic or Sanskrit grammar. He's coming for one of those reasons.
So artha jigyasa artati. And the jnani, he is coming on a different platform. He has no material desires, but he wants knowledge. Sukadev Goswami, Chatushana, the four Kumaras. So what happens to these people is they come to Krishna, and Krishna, kama sava kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha para. The Krishna satisfies the material desires, but like with Dhruva Maharaj, he purifies them. He purifies them, and Gajendra purifies them, so they have their material desires satisfied, but they become pure in heart, and they make at least make advancement towards Krishna. At least they make advancement by the mercy of Krishna. So these first three, the Artha Jigyasa Artati, they are called Karma Misra. Their bhakti is mixed with karma of material desires. And it's interesting to note that it's artha jigyasa artati, that this jigyasa is the most elevated of those three. He is not interested in mundane wealth, he is not interested in getting out of distress. He's curious, he wants to know about the truth. So he is listed in between artha jigyasa artati, because those other two, the artha and the artati, they have to come to the platform of curious before they can become pure devotees. As Prabhupada states it in the verse, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. So, because these are all misra bhaktas, they are mixed. They are not pure devotees. They want something. They are sakam. They are practicing sakam karma. They want something, even though they are devotees, they want something from Krishna. Kama sava kama va, they are sava kama. They have so many material desires. And this fourth one, the jnani, he is jnana misra. His bhakti is mixed with the desire for jnana. And there's a fourth kind of misra, which isn't mentioned here, that will be described in the eighth chapter. The next chapter, that is Yogi Misra, Yoga Misra Bhakti. When one's bhakti is mixed with yoga, that will be described in chapter 8.
Is it Kam Misra?
Karma.
Karma.
Karma Misra. Karma Misra, Jnana Misra, Yoga Misra. The Jnani is Nishkam, because he has no material desires. The other three are sakam. So, in the next class, we'll answer the next question. Out of these four, who is the best? Okay, thank you. Any questions? Sumukha Prabhu.
How do you perceive Radha Krishna and Om?
The acharyas explain the syllables meaning Radha and Krishna and their dealings together. This is how they explain it. Acharyas see the purpose of the Vedas. Om means Radha and Krishna.
So the most intimate conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is that one should always think of Krishna.
Yeah, there's two. There's Manman. This is explained right at the end of the 18th chapter. There are two essential verses, Manmana Baba Manbhakto and Savadaman Pritchasha. You should always think of Krishna, become Krishna's devotee, offer obeisances to him, and definitely one will come. Mam evyasyasi satyam te pratijane priyosi. One will come to Krishna. This is the essence of sadhana and siddha too. So this is the sadhya, the sadhana and the sadhya. So always think of Krishna. Smartavyo satatam Vishnu vishmartavyo najati chit sarva vidhi nishela cha itura eva kinkura. That always remember Krishna and never forget him. That these, all the other rules and regulations are merely servants of this one rule and regulation. This is the purifying process, always thinking of Krishna. This is the essence of practice.
Which is the perfection of Vaidhi Bhakti.
And Raganuga Bhakti. Both. They are the essence. If one is thinking of Krishna, motivated by the rules and regulations of the scriptures, in the Shastra it says that you should always think about Krishna, you should offer ghee lamps to Krishna, you should do this to Krishna, you should do that. If your motivation is from the Shastra, it is called Vaidhi Bhakti. If your motivation is due to a spontaneous desire to serve Krishna, it is Raga Bhakti.
So Bhagavad Gita doesn't hint at or introduce any of the more intimate relation.
Yeah, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur sometimes will put something in. And Prabhupada puts in that you should focus your mind on the two-arm form of Shyama Sunda, beautiful complexion, peacock feather on his head. But Bhagavad Gita is basic. Look, to bring us to the platform of surrender to Krishna.
Right understanding Krishna's
opulence. It's by understanding that He is great and we are tiny. That He is the Lord and we are His servant. He is Vibhu, we are Anu. Unfortunately, because we have an envious nature, that often doesn't work. We see someone big and powerful, and rather than the natural instinct of serving him and paying obeisances to him, we become envious and want to knock him down. This is the envious mentality. And you see that in the it's a difference in the mentality in the East, meaning Asia, and the West, meaning Europe, United States, that if In Asia, and you see it very clearly in India, if someone is big and powerful, everyone is reverential. If a big truck is going down the road, everyone is very reverential and moves out of the way. It's very practical that people respect power. And in the West, the mood is very, very different. People are more envious towards anyone who has power. They make the laws that the truck has to stop. It's a lot more convenient if you're walking down the road, I have to admit it. But the natural tendency is to offer respect to that which is more powerful than us. So therefore Krishna, to increase the devotion of Arjuna, will tell of his opulences. But he says, because you are not envious of me, I'm going to tell you this. Because if someone is envious, it will not have that effect. He'll just say, why Krishna has all these opulences? Who is this Krishna? Why is it that he didn't give me all the opulences? He's the supreme, so why couldn't he have made me equal to him? He can do anything he wants, so therefore he is a terrible ruler. What kind of God is this? He's made me suffer so much. He could have made me equal to him, or even better than him. If he couldn't make me better than him, that means he can't do everything. So what kind of God is he? So who needs this Krishna? Who's just has such a big false ego that he takes all the opulences for himself and leaves me eating so only two chapatis a day or something. So this is the envious mentality. But naturally, when we see something powerful, we should feel ourselves tiny. And knowing that we need shelter, it's due to our pride and our envy
that we don't take shelter. Nowadays, no one wants to take shelter. Everyone wants to be independent, as if we were worthy of being independent and powerful enough to be independent successfully. To become a servant when you go to the university, imagine if you were majoring in service, to become a servant. Can you imagine? You know, they would think you were crazy. Because no one wants to be a servant. We want to be independent. We want to be big. We want to move the world. We're completely unaware of reality, our actual position of being tiny and insignificant and very, very frail. 1, 2, 3 amoebas enter our body and we're on our back for days and days. And yet we are thinking, I am this, I am that, I am wonderful. In 10 years, in 20 years, in 30 years, we won't be able to walk. You know, our skin will be wrinkled like prunes. Our hair will have fallen out. No strength. And yet, we are thinking, I am this, I am that, I am powerful. Why do I need to surrender to anyone? Why do I need shelter? But the truth is, we need shelter so desperately. A child knows this. He goes running to his mother when there's difficulty. And similarly, a pious person, when he's confronted by God's arrangement, by Krishna's mercy, with his insignificance, when he's in distress, when he needs wealth, or he becomes curious and he can't find the answer, he turns to God. But an impious person will turn away. That is the basic difference between piety and impiety. Okay, thank you. So tomorrow...